And in the previous canto, the poet described Ashwapati's pursuit of the unknowable reality. How, as he ascends, everything that he has known and been falls away from him, and he is face to face with the nude, intolerant reality which permits nothing else to exist even for it. In this canto, he begins by describing how the discovery of one's soul is preceded by a mighty stillness when everything falls silent and there is a pervasive, profound sense of negation, a stillness absolute, incommunicable, meets the sheer self-discovery of the soul. The discovery of one's soul is necessarily in the depths of one's being, and as one approaches by plunging into oneself, withdrawing from the outer superficies, there is the beginning of a silence, a calm, which develops into peace. And as one goes deeper and deeper by practice, by constancy in the effort, the silence acts like a magnet, and everything else looks trifling, unreal, and there is an overpowering sense of being overpowered, of being swallowed up by this silence, stillness, which is, as it were, the doorway to the inner self. That's what it describes, a wall of stillness shuts it from the world, this discovery of the self, a gulf of stillness swallows up the sense faculties, they are rendered non-functional and makes unreal all the mind has known, all that the laboring senses still would weave, prolonging an imaged unreality. When one is in that status, the whole image of the world woven by the sense faculties looks totally unreal. and left to themselves, these senses would go on weaving that pattern. But in the presence of this stillness, the laboring senses are convicted of a certain unreality. Self's vast spiritual silence occupies space, space which is normally occupied by the movement in the world, is now occupied by the spiritual silence of the self. Mark, it is not physical silence, but spiritual silence. Spiritual silence permits activity, even speech. Unlike physical silence, which shuts off speech, spiritual silence is silence of the whole being, whereas physical silence, mauna as they call it, is only abstention from speech. Vocal activity which makes the mind very often more active than ever before. Only the inconceivable is left. The world movement being kept out, the senses being immobilized, only what is inconceivable, what cannot be thought of by the mind remains. Only this nameless, without space and time. What is experience, the self, does not permit any naming. You cannot describe it as this or that. And it does not occupy space. It is not a tenant of time. It is above both. Abolished is the burdening need of life. Normally, whether we want it or not, life presses upon us from all sides with its claims, challenges, putting a burden on each one, whether one likes it or not. But in the presence of the inner self, the burdening need of life is abolished. Thought falls from us. We don't need to stop thoughts. Thought itself falls away. That's the secret of successful meditation. Too often we hear that when one starts meditating, there are too many thoughts and there are so many techniques to deal with the problem. But the unfailing way is to intensify one's interest on the object of meditation. Say, one wants to realize, discover, know the self, the Atman, well, the mind should be so much seized with the passion for the discovery of the self, of God, say, that you don't care what sounds you hear, what thoughts play about, nobody bothers. That is why it is said that interest is the basis of concentration. Where you have interest, real, deep, possessing interest, concentration is automatic, natural. And hearing a motor car horn, a crow, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't interfere. These distractions fall away by themselves. If you are concentrated on what you want with dedication, you don't have to make an effort to stop thoughts. Thought falls from us. We cease from joy and grief, pleasure and pain. Joy and grief are the dualities of life. As long as you are interested in life, of the senses, you respond to contacts of the life on the basis of the interest of the senses. But once you are aloof, whether it is joyful contact or painful one, you are equal. There is a certain equanimity, an equal fronting to either wave from this ocean of life. The ego is dead, and the secret of being above joy and grief is that the ego must be dead. Ego is the point of concentration that involves us in the rounds of life. We are free from being and care. We have done with birth and death and work and fate. When you are pervaded by that silence, when you are at the threshold of the self, birth and death, work and fate seem to be no more real, no more relevant, and one feels a certain relief that they have been put behind. After describing in all these glorious terms this experience, the poet exclaims, "O soul, it is too early to rejoice, in your liberation, to rejoice in your freedom. It's too early. Wait a while. Why? Thou hast reached the boundless silence of the self. Thou hast leaped into a glad divine abyss, a depth of divine joy. Thou hast indeed done that. Entered the silence of the self, leaped into a divine well of joy, But where hast thou thrown self's mission and self's power? Thou hast forgotten that the self has had a mission. Yourself has had a mission. Yourself has a power, both of which have not been fulfilled. That is, when you are put to birth, you are born with a mission, you are endowed with power. Are you going to cancel both and merge yourself in the silence of the self? On what dead bank on the eternal's road, where have you thrown the self's mission and self-power? Have you thrown it on some dead bank, not a living bank, on the road of the eternal, across which life travels? And he reminds, one was within thee, who was self and world. When you came to birth, there was one, there was God within yourself, who was both yourself and the world outside. What hast thou done for his purpose in the stars? In putting you, God has had a purpose, has had a meaning. What have you done to fulfill God's intention in life? Escape brings not the victory and the crown. You may have escaped from the cycle of birth and death, from samsara as they call it, but that's only an escape. It is not the victory. It is not the crown that God has intended for you. Remember, he says, something thou camest to do from the unknown, from the unknown source and origin, thou camest all the way to achieve something, to do something. But nothing is finished, and the world goes on. You may have escaped, you may have merged, but the world goes on its painful rounds. Evil and suffering continue, because only half God's cosmic work is done. In your realizing the self, in your rising above the slavery to the senses and ignorance, only half the work is done. The other half is still to be done, unless you turn your back upon it and selfishly seek salvation. Only the everlasting No has neared. There is in this creation of God an everlasting No. No is a negation of the fleeting pleasures of life, unsubstantial moments of life, the attraction of the senses, the hold of ego and ignorance. For that, the answer is no, no, this is not it, this is not it. So thou hast neared that everlasting No, and stared into thy eyes and killed thy heart. This sense of negation has looked into thy eyes and pretty well killed thy heart. Your zest for life has been killed, no doubt. So the No has served its purpose, because thou hast liberated thyself from the hold of the senses, falsehood, But where is the lover's everlasting yes? God is the lover. The Supreme is the lover of you, of the world, of every living being. And he says yes to the project of life, to the experiment of life, to the adventure of life. Now, he says, where in thy life, in thy attempt, is the lover's everlasting yes and immortality in the secret heart? In your secret heart, there is an immortal sense, an immortal consciousness, which is above birth and death. Now, where is that? Where also is the voice that chants to the creator fire, the symbol Om, the great ascending word? The fire, the creative fire, is on, churning this whole life. And as the fire blazes, there is a voice that pronounces Om, Om. Om is the assenting word, Tathastu. Yes, yes. It is only when the priest says Om, the next step is taken. So, at every step in the sacrifice done to the divine flame, there is chanted this Om. Assenting word, sanctioning word, symboled Om. Om is a symbol. It's not just a word, but a symbol of Brahman, symbol of creative Brahman. Now, where is that word? Where is that voice in their life? Where is the bridge between the rapture and the calm? Human beings, if they experience the rapture of life, they miss the calm. If they concentrate on the calm, they miss the rapture. But there is a bridge which makes possible the simultaneous experience of both the rapture and the calm. The bridge between the rapture and the calm, the passion and the beauty of the bride, the bridge between the passion. Passion leads to many ugly moments, but there is also the beauty of the bride. The bride is God as bride. The chamber where the glorious enemies kiss, matter and spirit, world and heaven, human and divine. These are all contradictions in our thought. Freedom and bondage, rapture and calm, these are all contraries. But there is a chamber, there is a place where both of them meet together. The smile that saves. There is a divine smile that saves you and the world. The golden peak of things. Golden, gold to symbolize truth. The highest summit of things is truth. Thou hast missed it in denying yourself, in losing yourself in the eternal no. This too is truth at the mystic fount of life. This sanction, this bridge, this chamber, this smile of God, this too is truth at the mystic fount of life. It has inspired the whole life at its very source. All that has happened when you have approached the soul in the stillness, is a black veil has been lifted. A curtain, the curtain of ignorance has been lifted. We have seen the mighty shadow of the omniscient Lord. Once the curtain has been lifted, we see, what we see is a shadow, not the real self, not the real being of God. The mighty shadow of the omniscient Lord. A black veil has been shifted, all right. A shadow has been glimpsed as well. But who has lifted up the veil of light? There is another veil. First, there is a veil, a curtain of darkness, curtain of ignorance. Then there is the veil of light, dazzling light. It acts as a curtain. If you look only at that light, you get blinded. But who has lifted up the veil of light? And who has seen the body of the King of all, the omniscient Lord? Has anybody seen? And you pretend that you have known the truth. You want to turn your back on the whole creation, lose yourself in the calm and the stillness. Where is thy lover? Where is thy divine bride? Where is the smile that saves? You have known only the frown that rejects the world. The mystery of God's birth and acts remains, leaving unbroken the last chapter sealed. Thou hast arrived only at the last chapter, not even the last page. And the whole last chapter is bound, and there is a seal. Thou hast not opened it. He says, the mystery of God's birth and acts remains, leaving unbroken the last chapter seal, unsolved the riddle of the unfinished play. The play is not yet over. The last act is still to be played out. And thou thinkest that it is all over. And if thou thinkest that way, the cosmic player laughs within his mask. The whole world is a play, and God is the cosmic player. You can only laugh. He has a mask. You have not yet seen his face, not yet seen his body. And behind that mask, he can only laugh that his creature thinks that it has understood everything and solved the problem. And still, the last inviolate secret hides, the final secret, the ultimate mystery, which is still inviolable, untouched, unpierced, still hides behind the human glory of a form. The human form hides that secret. That secret hides behind the human glory of a form, behind the gold eidolon of a name. Eidolon is an unsubstantial figure. A name, we give a name. And a name is only an unsubstantial form, unsubstantial label. And this secret hides behind the human glory of a form, behind the gold eidolon of a name, gold to indicate that though the name as such may appear to be flimsy, unsubstantial, there is some truth in it. Gold, gold eidolon, gold image of a name. A large white line has figured as a goal. All that thou hast done is to arrive at a white line, a line of light, which thou hast mistaken for a goal, the goal of life. Whereas in fact, but far beyond the ineffable, beyond this line which looks indescribable and ineffable, sun tracks blaze, whole fields and fields of sunlight blaze, shine. What seemed the source and end, what thou hast mistaken to be the source of things, into something else, a last bare step into eternity, a new, unadorned, final step into something else, into eternity. But that's not the final goal, it is only a door opening into eternity.
Here.